There's something about spring that just feels like a reset. Longer days, fresh energy, and the motivation to try something new. This spring, that something new could be learning a new language. That's where Rosetta Stone comes in. They've been a leader in language learning for over 30 years with an immersive method that helps you learn naturally, connecting words, visuals, and meaning in context instead of memorizing or translating. With over 25 languages to choose from, like Spanish, French, German, even Japanese, Rosetta Stone is a go-to tool for real language learning. It's designed to help you think in your new language so what you learn actually sticks. Plus, True Accent gives real-time feedback on your pronunciation so you sound more natural, like having a personal coach. And you can learn anytime, anywhere, whether you've got 5 minutes or a full hour. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/today now and begin your language learning journey.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. Apologies for this kind of echoey sound quality, but I wanted to make sure to get out this episode while it's still fresh. A couple of updates. One is I'm going to be releasing a lot of episodes in a row. I'm doing kind of like a marathon of Katie Halper shows. And consider yourself lucky, blessed. It's Christmas came early this year, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa. Also, we talk about a loft law that we urge Cuomo to sign on this episode. This episode was done live radio. And guess what, guys? Because of you, because of the listeners, I'm sure that was a large part of it. The loft law got the Katie Halper Show bump, and Andrew Cuomo signed the bill. You'll hear about that more during the episode. Stand by for an episode with Ro Khanna, Anne Orchier from No Olympics LA, Dean Spade, Connor Habib, John Pat Leary, and many, many more.
Very excited to have two great guests on the show today. We have with us in studio Ava Farkas, the executive director of the Metropolitan Council on Housing, which is a housing organization. And she's going to talk to us about a landmark victory that she and countless organizers achieved in terms of housing and rent laws. But before that, well, how are you doing, Ava?
Great.
Great. All right.
I had to run a little bit to get here.
How come?
I live really far away.
Okay, yeah.
Not a morning person.
Not a morning person, but a fighting person. I know. Sometimes I'm amazed. I've known Ava for years, and sometimes I'm amazed that you've achieved as much as you have. Maybe, is there a classification? Like, I have this too a little bit, but like temporarily challenged for people who are late a lot?
I think there is.
Yeah.
You
should hold up government things.
Yeah, there
events.
Should be like a late schedule of everything.
Yeah.
Schedule.
Right.
There's a lot of shame.
Yeah, there is a lot of shame. And we should push back on that. And if people do that, we should call them out for, what is it, temporal phobia or something? I don't know. We got to think about this more. But it'd be funny if you showed up hours late to things like hearings. And when they started, you'd be like, actually, that's discrimination. And I'm going to sue you. Let's try it out. Yeah. So thanks again so much for coming in. And we're going to talk about all the great things that you achieved. Oh. And you can take calls. We're going to be taking calls. Is that okay? I forgot to mention that, Michael. Thank you. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Michael is the engineer. I haven't introduced you before because I didn't want to put you on the spot. But welcome to Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Makes the magic happen. And we will be taking phone calls at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877 at the end of, during the second half of the show. During the second half of the show. Okay. So first, right now, we are bringing in to speak to us Terry Rothstein, an organizer with Reclaim Pride Coalition. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. You?
Good, good.
Thanks so much for calling in, for talking to us today. So please tell listeners about what Reclaim Pride is and what the Queer Liberation March is. And I should also mention that Terry was an organizer also with ACT UP.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you so much. Yeah, so Reclaim Pride Coalition is an association of over 175 international LGBTI and national and local groups. And what we're doing is, in fact, reclaiming pride, bringing it back to its original roots in the Stonewall Uprising in 1969. There's a lot of folks probably know it's the 50th anniversary this year. And the, you know, the New York LGBT Pride Parade is usually organized by an organization called Heritage of Pride. And a bunch of us in the group, activists from the area and around the world, have noticed increasingly that Pride Parade here and in all places around the world have become increasingly more commercialized and sort of more state influence, government influence. So we, over a year ago, we started negotiations with Heritage of Pride, and we really got none of our asks were delivered. We wanted to get Gay Officers Action League not to march in the parade. We wanted to have much less policing, much less barricades, which kept people, you know, kept the community from joining the parade in an easier fashion, impromptu fashion. And we wanted to get the large presence of the corporate floats out that take up so much, you know, so much of the street time, so much of the air time during the broadcast, so much physical and auditory space. And we really wanted to, you know, bring it back to the roots, as we were saying. So we've organized this ourselves in the past year. It's a bunch of groups, a lot of activist groups, community groups, no corporations, no corporate funding. It's only been put together by donations that we've raised. And we start at 9:30 a.m. I know it's sort of a homophobic hour, but yeah. We start at 9:30 a.m. We had to do that to get around the other parade. So we started at 9:30 at Sheridan Square by Stonewall Inn, where it all began. And then at 11 o'clock, we're picking up a bunch of marchers at Bryant Park.
Okay, great. So a more homo-friendly
Exactly. I think it's everyone friendly.
Right, everyone friendly, yeah. Ava, by the way, Ava Farkas from Metropolitan Council on Housing is here with us in studio, so she's here too. And we were just talking about how we both struggle with time and how it's a real thing, and we're silent no more. So, yeah, maybe we'll make an appearance. Yeah,
exactly,
we should march this time in Pride. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I'll be there at 8 a.m. or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
But then we go all the way up to Central Park, and we're having a really great rally with a bunch of really cool political inspirational speakers and some really great entertainers. And all of this is, you know, we're centralizing marginalized folks, the people who do get threatened by the power of the state, and the people who don't benefit from corporate, you know, sustenance.
Right.
And that'll be represented in our march and in our rally. So we're hoping everyone can come out and take part and try and, you know, join in something that's really kind of grassroots once again in LGBTI.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at, just wanted to share some of the great speakers that you're going to be having.
Please.
Larry Kramer, of course,
from ACT UP.
Jason Walker. Nationally recognized activist, community organizer, movement builder working within the intersection of Black and queer liberation. Amir Ashour, who is the founder and executive director of IRA Queer, Iraq's first and only LGBTQIA organization. You got performers like Betty, the band Betty.
Yeah. Justin Bond is performing.
Oh, Justin Bond, nice.
Yeah, Masha Gessen is speaking too. We're really happy to have them.
Oh, great.
Blair Mani from UK is LGBT and Muslim British, and they're
Stacey
Ann
Chin.
What's that?
Stacey Ann Chin
is awesome.
Yeah.
Pam Sneed, some really great folks from the area and from all other places, and we're really pleased that people are just donating their time. And really
Margo Gomez.
Margo Gomez is emceeing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
She's a friend of the show. Yeah.
Awesome.
And John Cameron Mitchell,
yeah.
From Hedvig. That's
And right. I always want to say, people have been saying, I want to say it more and more, allies are totally welcome. It's not, doesn't have, you don't have to be queer to go. You could be queer in whatever way you consider yourself queer. It's going to be a really great, I think the march will be great and the rally will be really great too. It's in the Great Lawn.
Sorry.
And the whole thing, by the way, traces the original path
of
the march from 1970, the Christopher Street Liberation Day march. And so we're really happy to be able to do that.
Time queer. We can be time queer.
What's that?
Time queer, you know, for late people. Time queer.
Exactly.
I'm just
time
coining
queer.
That. Yeah.
I like that.
That's good, right? And I want to ask you about the progress of kind of LGBTQ rights acceptance. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's kind of a problematic word, but the mixed blessing that has come along with that in terms of the kind of commodification and corporatization of an identity, and also, of course, of this parade, but kind of how that speaks to a larger issue and what your thoughts on that were.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I want to say it's a very American thing, but we're sort of seeing it around the world. But I think, unfortunately, we've set the tone with it. I mean, let's be frank, the achievement of marriage equality was a huge thing. A lot of people were really happy about that. I myself am not the marrying kind. I don't feel like I and a lot of my cohorts needed it, but like a lot of people wanted that. We got it, and it does give us a degree of acceptance, but I think at the cost of some assimilationism, you know, some respectability politics. Because people who don't know queer people a lot of times don't, or trans people, don't know how to deal with it. But when they see that you're married or having children, they're like, oh, okay, they're just like us. And, you know, maybe we are, but in a lot of ways, we're not just like you, you know. And but the thing that came along with that, of course, is the commodification. Because in this country, people really only seem to think that you're accepted as when you can shop, when you can see, you know, logos that represent you. And now that poor rainbow logo is everywhere all over the city.
I know.
And unfortunately, it makes you not like the rainbow. I mean, I do like the rainbow. Yeah. I knew the designer who's now gone. And
oh, wow.
It did a lot of great things for us. It was Gilbert Baker was his name. And, with that assimilationism, then there's all the state stuff, you know, the military is now gay and trans friendly, and we've seen that whole thing changing. A lot of us don't agree with supporting a state that goes, you know, to the other side of the world, killing black and brown people on a daily, yearly basis, ongoing. You know, we've been fighting these wars for how long in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, and we don't see that as an achievement, that sort of, that degree of acceptance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, what is it like, Lockheed Martin using pink drones or, you know, hopefully.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pink washing.
Pink washing. Right. Yeah. And homonationalism. I like that. You know, and it's nice when you're a drone, it's nice when you're drone by a woman of color.
Exactly.
It brings a lot of intersectionality to your deaths.
One other great thing, an article just came out. You might want to take a look at a group called the Popular Information Organization looked at a bunch of the companies that the, HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, they do an index every year for like companies that are queer friendly, meaning that they do things for the LGBT workers. And like 9 of those companies, they looked them up and they got a perfect score from HRC. But then they found out that those companies, each of them gave at least $1 million, sometimes several million dollars to anti-LGBT politicians who actually, you know, promoted anti-LGBT policy. So it's kind of like, you know, an HRC is sort of the epitome of that very corporate friendly, gay, you know, LGBT type of nonprofit. And we're saying how can that they have a perfect rating if they're funding legislation that makes trans children want to kill themselves and unfriendly spaces for queer people and on the oppressive legislation that's coming down the pike now. So just pressing people to look at those contradiction.
Yeah, that's weird because I mean I know of things that are more, you know, corporate or militaristic and or just going through the motions but not doing anything for LGBTQ people, but this is interesting because it's actually thanking people who explicitly are going against what claims to stand for.
So, and there's many more examples that I could give you, but you know.
But we don't have all week. Yeah, marathon. And of course, the Dow Chemical, the founder of that is woke. Apparently, he's, you know, Dow Chemical has done terrible things all over the world. And it's really moving because he decided to come out after he had cancer, which really put life in perspective for him. But and so now
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I saw this article on him in Bloomberg, of course. And now he's able to, you know, bring cancer to other people being out and proud, you know, so that's really
important. It's insane. And it makes me sad sometimes because I see people in my own community pushing back. And,
right.
You know, a big thing that we're doing is, like I said, no police in the march, no corporations. And a lot of, unfortunately, middle class, usually white people don't get that. Not always, but like, don't get that. They're like, the police make us safe. And we push back with, well, who are they making safe? You know?
Yeah. Yeah,
trans
exactly.
Woman of color, Lillian Polanco, just died in Rikers Island 2 weeks ago because she wasn't given care. You know,
right.
These type of things go on all the time if you're marginalized. And those folks are in the community. So what are we doing for them?
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much. Really excited to be talking to you. Really grateful to be talking to you. And what is the social media that we can find you guys on?
Oh, it's Queer March, at Queer March on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And we have the event pinned there with all the speakers, and we'll be updating that daily.
Great.
So once again, encouraging folks to come out at any point during the afternoon on Sunday.
Tell us again what time it'll start and where.
Convince me to go.
I'm going.
Yeah.
Okay, great. The actual rally starts around 1, a little after 1 in Central Park. We're going to get there. The kickoff of the march starts at 9:30, but you could pick it up at Bryant Park also.
And
all the way up 6th Avenue.
Before you go, what is your proudest moment as an organizer or, you know, as a member of this community? I'm just curious, you know, Stonewall is 50, so you have to get it a gold gift. But I just wanted to know if there's anything you wanted to highlight that's kind of left out of history from your days of organizing.
From my days of organizing?
Yeah. It's kind of sorry to overwhelm you with a really big question.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anything you get proud about, you know, that you're particularly proud of or get emotional about?
Yeah. I mean, several years ago, someone called Elon Nettles was murdered. A trans black woman was murdered up in Harlem. And I was doing work with ACT UP back then. And this was just really starting to be an issue, the murder of black and women, trans women of color. And I helped out with some folks to organize that and sort of just stumbled into that. And I learned a lot. Was my proudest moment. And it was also a really huge learning moment for me to find out about my position as, you know, as a white cis man, man, and finding out about working with different communities and how different we all are, but how the same we are in some ways, and all the problems that are involved in that, but all the wonderful things that can come out of it. And that sort of that moment taught me that, yeah, there's a lot of work we need to do, but we can totally do it. And the community can come together and can rise above oppressive things like the state and capitalism, which I think more and more is the thing that is really just really rips us apart.
Yeah.
And I guess, that was the moment when I just kind of learned, we did a big rally down at One Police Plaza, got a lot of press for it. And eventually that case was solved and, the perpetrator was picked up. And unfortunately those horrible murders still keep happening,
right?
But the profile has been raised, I think, more and more every year. And hopefully we're going to have some changes, you know, around that particular issue.
Right. Yeah. And of course, another thing that you guys have achieved is Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who's the first.
Oh, I didn't achieve that.
I know. I'm being sarcastic, but I know I won't blame you for that. I won't put that in you. But of course, he's a gay. I saw someone tweeted the first openly gay man running for the Republican nomination, which was a joke because he's, of course, running for the Democratic nomination.
Yeah.
But
oh, my God.
And he's, of course, done not enough at all. He's in trouble now, justifiably, for not doing enough to combat police violence and police brutality and racism in his own town. Yeah. So he's taking off some time from the campaign to spend more time in South Bend ignoring the problem.
Okay. Well, I'm glad at least you take some time off the campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the kinds of things that you see come up all the time. Like,
right.
A lot of white gay men, privileged gay white men, don't see stuff like that. They don't see economic disparity.
Right.
You know, and they just think, well, I'm this cool gay guy and they left me.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Obviously, there are problems with that.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much, Terry, and come back
on
the show.
All right. I hope to see you Sunday.
Yes, you will. You'll see me and Ava from Met Council.
Okay, we'll
great. Bye.
Yeah, you too, Ava. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
We're late. We're here. We're not going anywhere. That was Terry Rothstein from Reclaim Pride. He has also been an organizer with ACT UP and also with Gays Against Guns. So Ava, welcome again.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Wow. I like your NPR voice and that dramatic pause. So, Ava, tell us about what you guys have achieved.
I practiced.
Yeah, it sounds good. What you guys tell us about this victory, this landmark victory.
Sure. So for the first time in 25 years, Tenens have won in Albany. We won the most far-reaching expansion and strengthening of rent regulation, which are the laws that govern a million apartments in New York City and suburbs around New York City. The laws, you know, if you're a tenant in a rent-regulated apartment or a rent-controlled apartment, you know that for the past couple of decades, landlords have had all kinds of ways of raising your rent that get around the normal annual rent increases that are supposed to be the main ways that the rent goes up. The whole purpose of rent regulation is to maintain a stable housing stock for working class people. There's an actual housing emergency in New York City because the vacancy rate is below 5%. So that means that the market is a landlord's market.
Okay.
And unless the government intervenes and regulates the rents so that, you know, the market is more fair and balanced, then landlords can really charge whatever right. they want.
Because of the supply-demand economy or because
exactly.
So they have a kind of a
monopoly.
The monopoly. They have the upper hand.
Right. Tenants can't just choose. If they can't pay $3,000, they can find another place that is, you know, $1,500 that doesn't exist there's regulation.
You're welcome, libertarians. We just explained to you why your stuff doesn't work. But anyway, in case anyone had any doubt. Yeah.
So basically, landlords have had tremendous power over the state legislature in Albany. And they were able in the 1990s to win loopholes and something called vacancy decontrol, which slowly started to dismantle the system of rent regulation. And it created a threshold that if the rent went up to and there was a vacancy, the landlord could deregulate that unit. So through that process called vacancy decontrol, we've lost almost 300,000 apartments to deregulation. So those apartments now are market rate, unregulated. Landlords can charge whatever rent they want and they don't have to renew people's leases. So that also creates like community instability. People can't, you know, don't have the security to know that they'll have a lease when their current lease is up in 1 or 2 years. That's happened largely in Manhattan, on the Upper West Side, on the Upper East Side, in the neighborhoods that really have, you know, gentrified really rapidly. And that's starting to happen in the outer boroughs. And so what happened this June is that after decades and decades of fighting and organizing, first tenants were able, through the help of many other anti-IDC organizations that mobilized in the, you know, Trump era.
IDC is
the Independent Democratic Conference. So landlords have always contributed tremendously to support Republican legislators in Albany. And they also helped prop up a Republican majority in the state Senate. The assembly has been Democrat for a long time and has supported our legislation for a long time. But the state Senate was really the barrier. And then Governor Cuomo would act like this impartial arbitrator between the two houses. But really, he was partial to the real estate industry. It gets a tremendous amount of money from them. So for the first time this year, we have a Democratic state Senate because of all the grassroots activism in the last election that ousted the Independent Democratic Conference, which were a group of Democratic legislators, but who caucused with the Republicans and helped give the Republicans their majority.
Right. And also helped give Cuomo cover. Right. Because
totally.
He said that he couldn't, you know,
Cuomo, you know, essentially helped create the Independent Democratic Conference so that there would be this split and that Cuomo could look like he's a progressive when he's totally not.
Right. Yeah.
So for the first time with Democrats controlling both houses in Albany, we won really historic, far-reaching rent regulations. So now there's no more deregulation. No longer will any apartments be taken out of rent regulation. There's no more vacancy bonus. So landlords won't get a 20% bump in the rent when they have turnover in a unit. So that disincentivizes like trying to displace and evict tenants and have high rates of turnover in your building. tenants with something called a preferential rent, which affects nearly a third of rent regulated tenants, where they had a lower discounted rent that could be up to the higher rent at a lease renewal. That rent will stay at the lower amount for the duration of their lease. So there's like tremendous impacts that affect tenants right now in New York City and that are going to really help curb speculation, displacement, gentrification across all our neighborhoods.
Can you tell us some tips that you have about organizing? I mean, you took on a lot of forces. The real estate industry, a lot of talking points. We often hear that, you know, if you make it, if you get in the way of profit, that you will stop investment in the city, that, you know, real estate businesses will leave and investment will exit from the city or from the state. What's your response to that?
Yeah, we're actually confronting a lot of these arguments now. Tonight, actually, the Rent Guidelines Board, which is appointed by the mayor of the city, decides the annual increases for rent stabilized leases. They're going to be meeting tonight at Cooper Union, 7 East 7th Street at 7 p.m. It's a great event. Tenants should come out and voice their opposition to any increase. But landlords are coming out and saying exactly that they, you know, will not be able to maintain their buildings.
Tonight is Tuesday,
7 p.m. at Cooper Union, the Great Hall at Cooper Union. So landlords are saying exactly that. They won't be able to maintain their buildings. You know, buildings will fall into disrepair. I mean, really, it's totally outrageous. They've been making tremendous, tremendous profit for these past 25 years. They're just upset that like the party's over and that things are going to go back to moderate profits. Like they make 41 cents on every dollar they get in rent. Their income always exceeds their expenses, and that's gone up for the past 13 years. So they're doing fine. There's also like a hardship provision. Like they can actually apply to the city if they're not making 5% profit. And they can have the normal increases waived. And so they can get a higher amount. No landlord ever applies for the hardship increase. So it's just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. They give these anecdotes that are not fact-based that, you know, there's also no way that giving them higher profit ensures that they spend that on helping tenants in their homes. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Tons of very profitable corporate landlords who make great profits, they don't necessarily reinvest it in their buildings.
Right. Yeah, that's always the narrative, right? As if that's the one thing in the way of their investing in
yeah,
the building.
They're not yeah. benevolent. They're not right. doing this because they right. love humanity.
Right.
It's
if only
business.
They had more money they could put into the community yeah. and put into repairs. Yeah. Well, Ava Farkas, we have two, we already have two people who have called in with questions. So hello, and can you state your name and where you're from?
Hi, I'm Susie Schwab. I'm from the East Village. Hi, Ava.
Hi, Susie.
Obviously you mentioned how the landlords are, or the landlord lobby is already spinning like disgusting PR campaigns all over. And, you know, we've all started getting involved in various discussions on various social media platforms. And I'm just wondering, because they're threatening lawsuits and everything, what can we do as a tenant movement to avoid some of that PR spinning? Because obviously they have the power and the money to do that. And I think we really need to be very careful because they are livid and they are doing everything to take this away.
Yeah, I mean,
thank you so much.
Partly, I think it's like an interesting problem to have. Like, this is sort of the first time we've been in this position where like we've won. So we, you know, we won. Landlords can like cry and whine and complain in the media, but that doesn't change the fact that the laws have changed and they've been passed in a way that they're no longer going to sunset. So
sunset
means they'd have to be renewed. It used to be that the laws would sunset and there'd be a fight to get them renewed every 4 years or couple of years. That's no longer going to happen. So it's going to be much harder for them to take this win away or to prepare for like the next battle in 4 years. You know, that's not to say that they're going to try to figure out ways to undo this or to elect people who are going to, you know, try to change the legislation. But we're in a pretty good position right now. And I don't think we should You know, I think they're in the organizing role that we used to normally be in. And they spent a lot of money on an ad campaign that ultimately wasn't effective. I mean, and they're really like out of the circle of power right now in Albany. They couldn't even get the governor to like intervene and change the negotiations between the Assembly and Senate.
Wow.
So things are really shifting. I think we have to continue like pushing that by being part of progressive organizations that are doing organizing to keep progressive change happening on a state level. Like many issues are interconnected. Real estate is like the most, one of the most profitable or powerful capitalist forces in the city. But like we have to be part of movements that are like chipping away at their power. And they really just encountered like a major setback. And so I think we just have to keep, we have to educate people. One, like tenants all need to know what these new laws are so they know how to enforce them. And so we make sure that landlords are following the laws, and we have to keep building our movement. Like we started building a statewide movement, which ultimately got this victory. And we have to keep building that movement. So get involved in your local, like community-based housing organization, contact Met Council, get involved in Housing Justice for All. That's the statewide coalition.
Keep on keeping on. And we have another phone call. Can you say your name and where you're from?
Hi, this is Marta, and I'm from Brooklyn, Bushwick. And hi, Katie and Ava.
Hi.
So, my question is, I'm in a rent-stabilized apartment, and the landlord has tried to buy us out. It's definitely gentrified. They've already destabilized. Is that correct? Destabilized a couple of the apartments. Like ours is 800 for a 3-bedroom and theirs is 4,000.
Oh, wow.
So, now they kind of do these things, you know, a few things here and there to try and get us out, but not too bad. But now with this deregulation?
Is that what?
Yeah. Deregulation.
Oh, sorry. Wait one second. I don't want
the end of vacancy decontrol.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever
it's called. Yeah.
Where they can kick you out and then make it, you know, 4,000.
Yeah.
Has that stopped now? Is that correct?
So there's no more deregulation. Yes. So they cannot deregulate your unit. Your unit, even if they raise the rent, even if the rent goes higher, there's no threshold amount beyond which it's deregulated. So, yes, the previous business model was to try to get long-term tenants to move so landlords could rehab the apartment because they passed on a major amount of that cost to the new tenant's lease, and they got a 20% bonus. So that would often take the rent of the apartment over the threshold and make it deregulated. So correct. They can no longer do those things. In terms of like the types of rehabs they can do, there's like a cap on the amount that they can do, and they can only do a certain amount over a 15-year period. And the charge to tenants will be about $83 to $89 additional on the rent. And about buyouts, now sort of the logic behind buyouts may not really exist for landlords. It may not pay. We might see a drop in buyouts because it doesn't really pay anymore. They're not going to gain anything, except maybe they can raise the rent a little bit, but there's not really an incentive anymore for buyouts.
Oh my God, this is incredible.
And we always advised people also to be very, to really be cautious about buyouts, because you're saying like, if you have a rent of $800 for a 3-bedroom, where else will you move? Even if you get a good buyout, like unless you can purchase an apartment or a home.
Yeah, they can't find another
apartment that you're going to rent that's going to be as affordable.
They gave her $20,000 to get out.
Oh yeah, that's ridiculous. You'll spend that on rent in a year. That's totally ridiculous.
And we said no. I mean, no way.
Yeah.
No way. Wow, incredible. Well, thank you for all your good work. This is incredible, incredible news.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Ava, I have a question for you. So you're talking a lot about policy, of course, and these important victories you achieved. But can you tell us some of the personal stories about some of the people you are organizing with and what this means for them?
We work with so many great tenants that are a part of, who like took so much of their personal time to be part of this fight, took days off from work to come up to Albany. So one issue that's like important to our members is rent control. So there's like two systems of regulation. Rent control is the older system, and rents for rent control tenants were set by a different formula than rent stabilization. So rents were going up 7.5% every year. And so we have like a member who lives in Inwood named Bennett, who's a social worker, has lived in Inwood like his whole life. He inherited the apartment he grew up in, because that's also part of rent stabilization, is you can have succession rights to succeed the tenancy of a relative, your family member, your parents. And so Bennett,
hi Bennett, if you're listening,
who is a social worker in Inwood, was a big part of the fight against the rezoning. His rent, I forgot the number off the top of my head, but it was like over $2,000 a month, and he was paying higher rent than many other tenants in his building. And so now the changes in the law will mean that he'll get a lower increase, and it'll be an average of, I believe, the past 5 years of increases that the rent guidelines board passes, which is how the increases work for rent stabilized tenants. That's the decision that's happening tonight.
Tonight, Tuesday. Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's also just, we've heard a lot from preferential rent tenants, but we have a clinic where people come and ask for, you know, our advice and information weekly. And we see people all the time that have preferential rents that are being taken away, not offered again by their landlords. So their rents are often increasing like a couple hundred dollars from 1 year to the next, and they're not going to be able to afford it. Actually, no, I do remember there's a building on Kruger Avenue in the Bronx that an ally organization of ours works with. And tenants there almost all were getting hundreds of dollars of rent increases. They almost all had preferential rents, and none of them were signing their new leases because they would not be able to afford the hundreds of dollars of increases to their rent.
How does housing intersect with other issues like health, racial justice, mental health, health in general?
I think housing is like a really essential human. I mean, it's a human right. We believe it's a human right, and we believe it's a human right because it's so critical for so many other things to go well in your life. Education, health. I mean, I think that without like stable housing, there's a whole like housing first movement among folks who do work on homelessness, mental health, like other health issues. That's like a philosophy that believes that like you can't solve any health, like public health crisis or like severe chronic health issues without first having stable housing for people. So, you know, if you don't have a healthy and safe and affordable place to live and housing is like a stress for you, then like all other things in your life or all other problems are going to be like exacerbated.
Right. And of course, education, how it interferes with education.
Yeah. I mean,
right?
If you don't know that you're going to be able to stay in the same community for the duration of like your child's elementary school education or junior high school education, then that creates a lot of challenges for families.
And I assume there's a lot of shame also associated with homelessness. You know, I mean, it's just a lack of stability, as you said, exacerbates all issues and all problems. We have another phone call. Can you say your name and where you're from?
Oh, hi, it's Joan, East Village. I was interested. Was your name Ava?
Yeah.
Ava? Yeah, I was interested to hear you mention rent control. You know, I never even thought of asking about it. I am one of those people. I think, all, you know, there are 10 of us left in the city who are under rent control as opposed to rent stabilization, because it means that you have to have lived in that apartment since 1971, and very few people are still in the same apartment since 71. Mm-hmm. So it never occurred to me that rent control was affected. So let me get clear what you said. Did you say that it is no longer going to be a 7.5% increase?
Correct.
It's going to be an annual increase based on the average of the last 5 years of rent stabilization. So,
correct.
In other words, the last 5 years of the rent stabilization increases were what, 3 and 2 and 0 and 0 or something like that?
Yeah, currently.
So it would be like 2% or 2.5%
for rent control tenants?
It's going to be the
average
tenants. Is that what you're saying?
It's going to be a 5-year average of the 1-year increases. So that's, yeah, for the past couple of years, that's been like, this year is 1.5%. There was 2 years of a rent freeze,
right,
for 1-year leases. There's also not going to be any more fuel pass along costs to rent control tenants.
Oh, so that means the increase, do you know what it is offhand for this year?
I don't know. And this is something that we're working to find out from the state housing community, HCR. We're trying to find out like when this is going to start and when the new number will be out. So we're working to get more information about that. And you can, like, contact Met
That's
Council.
That's great.
About
I didn't
that.
Even imagine that could happen. But the other thing, so when exactly does this law go into effect?
It's in effect as of June 15th.
It's already in effect.
Yes,
retroactive,
yes.
Kind of.
I mean, not retroactive.
It passed
on June
passed.
14th. So the day, actually, it's the day it passed. It's June 14th, I believe.
We should make that
right.
Note.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We're talking
if people
to, yeah,
also, we have, us. So we have a hotline at Met Council. People can call us with questions just like these at 212-979-0611 on Mondays, Wednesdays from 1:30 to 8 o'clock and on Fridays from 1:30 to 5.
Can you say that number again?
212-979-0611.
Okay, great. What about Bill de Blasio? How is he doing in this area? And also, are you up to date on the Loft Law, which is
I'm not super knowledgeable about Loft Law, but I do know that the governor still hasn't signed it.
Yes.
And we worked really closely. I mean, we are supportive of the Loft Law and the tenants who are fighting for that. And we worked really closely with many of the loft tenants who, like, really mobilized and supported our fight for stronger rent laws. So they're fighting for basically more lofts to become stabilized,
right,
under rent stabilization. And I know that the bill passed in the Assembly and Senate and is still waiting to be signed by the governor.
Right. And of course, the real estate lobby, the real estate industry is really pushing against it.
Yeah. I mean, these are like, you know, lofts in Williamsburg. This is like areas of the city where they, Bushwick and Williamsburg, and other areas where they want to make, you know, more profits.
Yeah. It's turning into a terrible, like, artsy Disneyland over there.
Yeah.
Not really artsy, like fake artsy. Mm-hmm. Fartsy. And people are actually asking for calls. You can call in to urge Cuomo to sign this at 518-474-8390. Again, that's 518-474-8390. So yeah, tell us about where de Blasio is in all of this.
Yeah, it's interesting. Glad you're asking. So
Mayor
de Blasio was largely absent and silent during the rent law fight, which I think was problematic. You know, he's out campaigning and talking about how he's
running for president.
Yeah. He's out in Iowa talking to them instead and talking about how he's going to be, you know, the candidate of working people and always touting his progressive credentials. But he was really silent on an issue that affects like 2 million working class people and majority people of color, majority low income in our city. You know, his agency folks came to like some of the hearings and they sort of had a moderate idea. They supported some of the bills we were fighting for. They didn't support others. It just, you know, was not the kind of like robust support that I think we would expect from a mayor who claims to be as progressive as he does. And tonight is really like his turn to show where he, whose side he's on, whether he's with tenants or landlords, because he appoints all the members of the rent guidelines board. And they did, you know, pass 2 years of freezes for 1 year leases. But in recent years, they've been increasing the percentage, and we're worried because landlords are really trying to make this case that they're going to be hurt by the new rent laws and that the rent guidelines board should give them some relief. And there's no evidence of that. And this is just like fear mongering. And they're just sad that their profits may take a slight hit, which is not going to be, considering how much profit they make, I don't think is going to really result in the catastrophe that they're talking about. So really now is like the mayor's turn. I think everybody should be paying attention to how the members of his board vote because he has influence over them. He likes to, you know, claim that they're independent and he has no control over that. But I don't think any of us believe that.
And any other politicians you want to take the time to either highlight and thank or not thank? And put on notice. We're going to start a new thing. Katie Halper Show's putting you on notice.
Yeah, I mean, Governor Cuomo, I just think if anybody has any doubt about where he stands and what his allegiance is, like, he's totally in the pocket of real estate. He did not help pass this legislation at all. It actually happened, like, around him. And I think it's a good thing that his power seems to be diminishing somewhat in Albany and that the majority leader, Andrew Stewart Cousins and Carl Hastie of the assembly are like partnering together. Like that's a huge development for progressives fighting for change at the state level. There were really great state senators who really like push this legislation forward, like Zelnor Myrie in Brooklyn and Julia Salazar and Robert Jackson.
Friend of the show, guest of the show. Got to get those other guys on. Yep.
Yeah. Really like many of the elected officials who ran against the IDC and ran on housing as like a major plank of their platform. That was really important that we had people running on the issue of affordable housing and on renter protections.
Great. We have another phone call. Please say your name, where you're from.
Isha, and I'm from New York.
Hi, Isha.
Hi, Katie. So my question for Ava is that it's actually exceptionally hard to find an apartment in New York City, especially with predatory, like some landlords require like 3 months of rents in advance. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in the changes in deposits that would make it more reasonable and affordable for people so they don't have to save up?
So glad you're asking this.
Yeah, great question. Thank you, Isha.
There was not a change at the state level on this, but the city council is actually having a hearing on Thursday, which I'll be testifying at.
Testify.
Because they want to pass a bill that would limit the deposit or the broker's fees. It's actually limiting broker's fees to only 1 month's rent. That is the law for rent stabilized apartments, but it's not the law for the other million apartments that are not regulated. So right now brokers can charge whatever fee they want. So it's about broker's fees. I believe it's also about security deposits being only 1 month's rent. That don't quote me on. I have to make sure. Double check on that. But there is going to be a hearing. So if you're interested in that issue, please come out to the hearing 1 p.m. at City Hall this Thursday.
Great. And we have another call. Thank you, Isha. And our next caller, can you say your name and where you're from? Hello? Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
Hi. Can you say your name and where you're from?
My name is Gerard, and I'm from New York, New York.
Great. Do you have a question for Ava Farkas, Executive Director of Metropolitan Council on Housing?
I absolutely do. My question would be, we continue to villainize the private landlords in New York, but the biggest problem landlord in New York is NYCHA. Why don't we try to fix NYCHA, which looks after so many New Yorkers?
All right. Interesting hot take.
And can I ask, are you involved in the real estate industry, or are you a landlord?
I am a small private landlord, yes.
Good, good, interesting. Wowie, I'm impressed, yeah.
And how many buildings do you own?
I own two buildings.
And are they rent stabilized?
No, they are not. They're both free market apartments.
Okay, did they used to be rent stabilized?
No, they were never rent stabilized.
Okay. Okay, I mean, my answer, why do we vilify landlords and not NYCHA? I mean, personally, I believe that public housing is a very important public good and has been systematically underfunded and has been really made to fail, and that there should be tremendous investment in NYCHA. I think that's an important 2020 issue. I think all national candidates should be talking about how to lift the ban on federal funding for the creation of more public housing. I think that helps lower market rents for all renters across the country or across the city where the public housing is built. I don't think, you know, I also don't think it's like a personal issue. So I also don't think it's super helpful to just say like landlords are bad or to make it about like individuals, right, or talk about, you know, it's not about like individual choice. It's not about morals. It's about a business model. And the reality is that like the business model of owning property in New York City has been one that's where it's profitable. And if you're a good business person, then you take advantage of these loopholes because that's the way that you make money and you maximize profits. And that's what you're supposed to do. So I also don't think it's just about personal choice. I think it's about changing the rules of the game or the rules of the industry so that it stops being profitable to try to evict people. It stops being profitable to take people to housing court, even if there's no case against them. It's the same as minimum wage. It's like, yeah, there's always like a complaint that you're like going to drive small businesses out of business. But you have to kind of lift all boats together. Otherwise, businesses that pay people more are like at a disadvantage, and businesses, right, that pay people less are getting ahead. So you have to level the playing field all at once and change the rules so that the industry adapts. And I just think that's, so I don't think, you know, I also don't think it's super helpful to just demonize, right, landlords. It's about like changing the structure systemic of the system.
Yeah. And also, of course, you know, it's decentivizing exploitation, because when you have these different, as you just said, Ava, you are creating incentive for people to exploit when you don't have limits on that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and banks benefit from it. I mean, it's a whole system. Right. Like banks are making loans on buildings at inflated values because the building is looked at not just as what the current rents are, but how much can the future rents be. So based on the old rules, the future rents could be really high,
right,
because they could deregulate the apartments. They could target these couple people and take them to court because maybe they can prove it's not their primary residence, or, you know, so it was based on this future projection that was predicated on eviction and displacement.
Right. Yeah.
And you have to change those rules to change how people do business.
You have to change where we're at to change where you're going. Is that the caller still on the line, by the way? Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Oh, great. Yes. And I would love to bring it back to NYCHA because I want to present an alternative to public housing. And I want your opinion on this. Public housing does not allow the individuals in public housing to build equity over time. So those individuals continuously stay in public housing, and it's very difficult for them to build any equity. Whereas if they were buying properties, they would be building equity over long periods of time. And that would help raise all the boats. And I think that solution is much better than throwing more public money into NYCHA, which is it's abysmal. There's no way to get around it. It's an asset-rich, cash-flow-poor business model.
So, yeah, I mean, there's just... It's very popular right now. So this is a major talking point also of the Real Estate Board of New York, of the Rent Stabilization Association. And their major talking point is to demonize NYCHA. Right. I think it's totally racist and totally like a racist dog whistle that's based on this idea that like NYCHA is a terrible place to live. Why should you continue to live there? Because it's like a place of poor people and people of color.
And handouts that
and why should it be a bad place to live? Like NYCHA should be a wonderful place to live if it was funded well and well maintained. Like, why wouldn't you want to live there your whole life and raise your kids there? Like, we should strive for it to be like the best type of housing that it can be. That's how it is in many like, you know, democratic, socialist, European countries. They have wonderful public and social housing. Right. And, you know, I just think that there's a whole paradigm, an ideology of private property and home ownership in this country that is not the reality for a growing and growing segment of the American public. And also is not, I don't know if that's the best model for housing. Like, I grew up in Mitchell-Lama Housing, which is a wonderful program that allowed people to be co-op owners, but didn't purchase their like the profit was taken out of like the purchase price and how much you paid for maintenance. And I just don't think housing as a commodity, I think, is the wrong solution and creates the crisis of homelessness. Like, as long as housing is a commodity and, you know, it's exclusive and private property and capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we, you know, look out for those tropes about throwing money at things. We hear that a lot. There are these talking points. You know, typical thing is something's underfunded. And then the argument is, look how badly they're doing. We shouldn't be funding them as opposed to demanding more funding. So we just, all we're doing is saying, give democracy a chance, give peace a chance, give fair housing a chance. And with that, we bid you adieu. Again, thank you so much, Ava Fark, as Executive Director of Metropolitan Council on Housing. Where can we find you very quickly?
You can find us on Twitter at @Met_Council and on Facebook at Met Council and MetCouncilOnHousing.org.
Great. And you are listening to The Katie Halper Show. Thank you so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.